Shoes. Recorded live.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 37 of the Wrestling Culture Podcast. Dave Musgrave here with my co-host and good friend Dylan Hales, who, much like the subject of this week's show, just wants to make everybody happy. How are you tonight, Dylan?
I'm good, actually, all things considered. It's just been a long few weeks. As Dave
yeah,
and I
it's
have
been a while
to do a show.
Oh, yeah. I think we could both use it to cheer up a bit, so.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Not that either one of us is, you know, totally gone insane or anything, but.
No.
Yeah.
But we aren't NFL players or NFL football players or anything like that, so.
It's just been a tough couple of weeks, yeah, and we've wanted to do a show for, at least in my case, for at least the last 2 weeks, and it just, that learning thing is really stupid.
What's that?
No, so, yeah, so, it's been a while, but the good news is that we have, I think, a pretty cool show idea lined up for today, and on top of that, I think we'll have at least one pretty cool surprise guest, hopefully, in a couple of weeks, so
yeah,
that'll be nifty, anyhow, Dave, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good, man. You know, lots going on my end, professionally and personally, but, you know, pulling through it all. I'm off on vacation for a week and a half as of a week from now, so of course, I'm in full-on Jack Bauer mode, you know, until then, you know, there's always a twist and turn that just changes the day for me. The world's always crumbling around me, but somehow I get through and save the day, so.
I really want to Photoshop your face on his body now, but I'm not good with Photoshop, so I'm not going to do that.
No, not a good one for me either, so. But yeah, no, I'm getting through, and you know, glad to have some time off. We're gonna actually head to Buffalo for a couple of days is the plan, which doesn't sound like much unless you're someone who doesn't get to eat a Cracker Barrel or Olive Garden.
I like the fact that Buffalo is like a big trip for you, because in the United States, people have been trying to escape from Buffalo for 25 years.
Yeah, I remember when. WrestleMania was coming here. A guy, I think it might have been Rick Skaya, did a comparison between Toronto and Houston, because it had been in Houston the year before, and was comparing the two cities. It's like, he writes, Toronto has a very cosmopolitan population. It is an up-and-coming city in North America with much diversity and opportunities for individuals, but it loses points for its proximity to Buffalo. Houston is a very non-diverse city that has almost nothing going for it and really shouldn't have had a WrestleMania, but it gains points for its distance from Buffalo. Advantage Houston. It was pretty awesome.
Oh, that's lovely. Yes, Buffalo.
Yeah.
One of these days we should do a show on the history of Buffalo Pro Wrestling. And I'm actually only half kidding, but today won't be that day. So,
No, and I do plan on trying to hit Ilio DiPaolo's restaurant as well.
I was literally just about to ask you that.
Yeah, yeah. All those commercials on ROH TV from Buffalo with Jay Lethal at the restaurant are just, you know, have me wanting to go there. So
you should check out the statue. Supposedly there's like one or two statues in town, I think, too, for him. So.
Oh yeah.
You should get if I'm not mistaken, there are and. I think it would be real, because he's kind of like Whipper Watson in Toronto, you know, like this,
yeah,
like
yeah,
to a degree. I mean, maybe not quite as big a deal, but I mean, not wildly far off. I think it would be.
Thankfully,
really cool.
Unlike Whipper Watson, his son is a restaurant owner rather than a sex offender. But.
You should, but having said that, you should totally go and take inappropriate pictures of yourself next to the statue. No. Actually, I'm dead serious, because that's probably.
Well,
I already
did take pictures of myself in front of Whipper Watson Park, so. And his son commented on it. So.
Oh,
and then
the old,
then he got busted. Then he got busted. So.
That's a sad
so,
tale.
The topic of our show that we segued to earlier is someone who likes to offer peanuts, very much like to drink beer, and didn't mind pooping all over Bad News Allen once in a while. Yes, indeed, we are wanting to talk about Andre the Giant. That's
that
all
was a very good intro. Yeah, I like that intro. It was very thoughtful. And I think the best thing about that intro is it really promoted the best things about Andre's message.
Exactly. I'm sure that those are the words he'd like written on the sign in front of his estate.
No.
Alcoholic, deadbeat father, and master pooper, Andre the Giant.
You know what I think is the best thing about that intro is the fact that you felt the need to, like, not, you don't want to go on record saying shit or shitter, you know, after all the abuse we got, after the mean things we said about Bob Brown, you don't
speaking of shit, yeah.
you don't want to go on, you don't want to go on record saying that, but you will call a guy an alcoholic and a deadbeat dad, so. Okay, now, having said that, all those negative things about Andre, which we'll try to put behind us for the majority of the show, I hope, it was your idea to do a show on Andre, and I said, yeah, that's a good idea. So, why did you want to do the show on Andre?
Well, it was just the 20-year anniversary of his passing, and, you know, all the jokes aside, I mean, I was a huge Andre fan, and I really only saw, like, I mean... Me being an Andre fan is like being saying, like, in 1974 you were a huge Elvis fan. I mean, I knew the old fat version. Never knew the classic version. But, you know, you just – I think I dare to say Andre the Giant might be the best wrestling name of all time.
Well, like, you know what? Maybe so.
Killer Kowalski is up there, that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
but,
I mean, Jean Ferry is certainly not the... That was the wonderful story that Pat told on our show, you know, about a month or a month and a half ago, however long it was,
yeah.
About Andre getting his name. It was pretty great. But, yeah, Andre the Giant is really a great wrestling name, you know.
Well, I remember... In 1985, like, my brother was staying up to watch Saturday Night Live. I was 10, Saturday Night's Main Event. I was 10, couldn't quite convince the folks to let me, and we didn't have a VCR yet. But I just remember my brother reading from the TV guide, and he was like, Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant versus Big John Studd and King Kong Bundy. I mean, those names just captured me. Like, I couldn't believe how cool that sounded.
You know, that's actually a really, this is a mild segue, but that's actually kind of a cool point because I honestly have never thought about that in all the wrestling geek stuff that I do and that, you know, I'm a part of. I'd never really thought about the role that names play in wrestling, but especially when you're a kid, stuff like that really does capture you because looking back, it really does, I mean, like, you almost... It's especially funny now, the dichotomy, when you've got guys named like Cassius
right
Ohno and Seth Rollins.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of insane how different it is now because those names really do jump off the page at you, and they seem larger than life, and really, honestly, at least in the guys you just mentioned, those guys were all pretty literally larger than life, so...
the other names you just mentioned, too, like, I mean, some of the things from that era, like, Ricky the Dragon Steamboat sounds much cooler than Ricky Steamboat, and, like, that's something that UFC still does, is going with those kinds of nicknames, but I think wrestling should get back to as well.
Yeah, I think that's actually it's kind of a weird point that I honestly have never thought about that way, maybe because I'm too obsessed with, you know, pedantic aesthetic bullshit, but...
I don't think you like spending too much time thinking about wrestling myself.
Oh, God. It's actually quite sad. But, yeah, Andre is... I cannot think of a better wrestling name than that. That's a really good point. And not only a better wrestling name, but a name that better fits the guy. right? Because
exactly.
Because that's part of having a good wrestling name, is that whatever your moniker is fits your image. And I don't know that anything, like, they could have dolled it up with, like, a bunch of other crap or whatever, but just saying The Giant was very simple and to the point as a suffix to Andre, and I think really got over the totality of his awesomeness. Because the guy really, I mean, to me, there's really nobody like him in the history of, like, there are very few guys you can say that about, by the way. You know, there are guys where you can say, you know, this guy is extremely important in wrestling history, or this guy is a Hall of Famer, or this guy is an all-time great. There's not that many guys where you can say there's nobody like him. At least I don't think there is. I think with the majority of people in wrestling, even the greats, that you have points of comparison. You have people. You have people you can look at and say, well, they're a lot like this guy, or they're similar here, or whatever. Andre is on a very short list of dudes who really sort of stands on an island unto himself. I really don't think you can compare anybody to him. He's almost
as far as his iconic image, or even as far as how he did his career, right?
Yeah, like the whole thing, the entire everything, the career narrative, the image itself, the moniker, the way, just actually his importance to wrestling. And I mean, we'll get into this some, and I don't know if you've got a timeline you want to run down, or if you want to do this free form or what, but like, just looking at, I mean, as I went through AWA results, and then also Mid-Atlantic results and WWF results and other results, which I've done a lot of, as you know, in the last, we'll say, 3 years, 2.5, 3 years, mm-hmm. It's amazing how much of a draw Andre the Giant was. Like, everybody knows that. It's something that is just accepted, and I don't think anybody would really contest it. People say, yep, Andre was a draw. They bring him in a few times a year and drew big. Yeah, okay. But
hearing he's a draw and seeing the numbers are two different things.
Yes, radically different. Like, I mean, in the it really blew me away with the AWA. I mean, more so than other places, because a town like San Francisco, rather, where they really never should have been running because they never really drew very well there, to be honest, Andre would, like, spike the gate 4,000, 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 people. You know, Winnipeg, the biggest shows were always with Andre on the show. Like, they would do, like, 4,000 or 5,000 more than normal. Like, and these are towns that weren't, like, Winnipeg was a good town always, pretty much, or a solid town. And all the big cities, you know, the cities that people associate with being AWA loop cities were the same way. It's not like it was just those, you know, guaranteed sellout if he was in Green Bay, you know, guaranteed sellout if he was in Milwaukee, always gates up in Chicago, always gates up. And part of it was that they were doing the Battle Royal gimmick too, I guess, but you get the feeling that Andre was just, you know, when people talk about the all-time biggest stars and draws in wrestling, I think there's always just like, okay, Austin, Jim Londis, if you're somebody who knows your history, Hulk Hogan, Ricky Doza. I mean, people know the big names, but for some reason, Andre never really gets mentioned. I guess maybe because he was an attraction, more or less, and not a guy that, you know, a promotion was built around. But in terms of raw numbers and looking at what he did, were shows without him, and then when he comes in, he's right there, like, near those guys. I mean, he might not be Londis or Hogan, but he's not terribly far off. He's much closer. He's much closer to that camp than he is to the next camp, I guess would be my point.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, sure, promotion wasn't necessarily built around him, but, I mean, that's even more impressive. I mean, I know he went into the Maritimes and, you know, did well. And, you know, like, I don't think you'd even need to know who he was, and you'd see his name in the marquee and want to see him.
Yep.
Like happened to me, you know.
I forget who said this, and I don't remember if I read this maybe in Mattisic's book, new book, or if I read it somewhere else. But there was somebody I read not that long ago where they were talking about Andre, and Andre was listed as like one of the only guys who by himself could draw a crowd. Like, there was, you know, but I think it was like Andre, Buddy Rogers, and maybe one or two other people. like, because everybody else, it was at least somewhat angle dependent. You know, you had to have something to drive the interest, even if one or two guys were ultimately the drawing cards and the stars. There still had to be something to drive the interest. With Andre, it was like, well, Andre's on the show, we're going to go. You know, like, it didn't matter who he was wrestling, almost.
And if he wrestled someone, if he had a cool angle, all the better.
Yeah, I mean, they would often pair him up with, you know, with valuable guys. I mean, you don't see him wrestling scrubs. He wrestles guys that are either other big guys or big stars or people who could sort of work a strongman gimmick against him, which is why he often was paired up with Kim Patera, for example. But I just don't think people realize how big of a, I mean, he has that iconic name, and I think he's probably one of the most famous names and images in wrestling history. But I don't think people realize how big of an actual contributor he was to business. I don't think, because he's never talked about with the same sort of reverence of these other guys. He's never talked about the way you talk about Bruno. He's never talked about the way you talk about Hogan, or at least not in the circles I travel in. Maybe it's just me. But he really should be in a lot of ways. You know, I mean, yeah, it's a different sort of deal because he's an attraction, but if you want to look at it that way, compare him to other attractions. I mean, compare him to Brody or Abdullah or some of these other guys that were sort of your jet setters who came in and out of places. He, not to denigrate anything these guys did, but he destroys them as a drawing card.
Yeah.
Absolutely not even close, you know, and that's pretty much everywhere he went too, you know, so yeah, just a huge, huge star, literally and figuratively, that I don't think is getting given enough credit. I mean, I don't even think he's given enough credit in the sense, like, the WWE expansion, we're skipping way ahead, but I just want to get this out of the way while I'm thinking about it. But the WWF expansion, when it first kicked off, you know, everybody thinks about Hogan, and obviously Hogan was the driving force, and then Hogan Andre is what they eventually built to at WrestleMania 3, which is the big show. Everybody knows that. But on, when they did the feud with Andre and Big John Studd and Ken Patera and the haircutting angle and all that, they took that feud on the road, and it usually was paired with Greg Valentine and Tito, which was another really hot feud that had some great matches. And it drew really well, a ton of places. And in fact, it was that kind of co-main event that actually resurrected Detroit. You know, like that Detroit, which would have been a totally dead wrestling town. They came back into Detroit with that feud on top and drew the first sellout in Detroit in like 10 or 15 years. And did the same thing, and then they reran a subsequent follow-up match, maybe even two, that did really well there too. So I don't even think Andre gets enough credit when it comes to stuff like that. You know, like he's just sort of not thought of in that way for whatever reason. That's my first filibuster of the night, Dave. I'll let you speak.
when we had Pat and Bert on, one of the things we talked to them about is that, you know, I mean, the general consensus for a long time, you know, basically to me, I got this from I think the Unreal Story of Professional Wrestling, but I think it was kind of like thought to be the dominant truth was that, you know, he went into Montreal and he was a big draw for a while, but what eventually people were tired of, you know, just knowing that he was never going to lose, so they stopped. He stopped being such a draw, and that's when they decided. That's when the genius of the McMahon family realized I had to move him around a lot. But it really sounds like he never did actually stop being a draw there.
Yeah, that's the impression I get. I mean, talking to Pat and Bert, who would know better than anybody, obviously, I don't even think that's subject for debate, that's not the impression I get. And again, even as late as 83, which was, you know, granted, 83, he'd already gone and done a bunch of stuff and trailblazed and was coming back. But the point is, even as 83, he was able to draw a gate at the Forum, or paid attendance at the Forum with Kim Patera, who was also a guy who supposedly was well past his prime at that point. That was like 16,500 people. You know what I mean?
That's
like, that was in 83. you know, like after a lot of stuff had gone on, and actually not, you know, I don't know. I think I definitely feel, and we don't, you know, the Andre origin story is kind of interesting too, Dave, because you hear different.
You mean how he got his superpower?
I think that was his pituitary gland. I actually don't think that's a big shot, but or whatever gland that is, adrenal. See, I don't know. I'm an idiot. But
I thought you were an expert on giant glands.
No, I'm not. Sadly, I would be interested to know. I mean, we're never going to know, I guess, his true origin because. I've heard different versions of who found him in Europe. You know what I mean? Like there's competing stories about who discovered him in France or whatever. And then there's of course, like you mentioned, there's sort of competing stories about his time in Montreal and whether or not he sort of fizzled out and whose decision it was to take him and make him a road attraction. So there's sort of a mythology around him, even outside of the fact that he's a gigantic dude. Who, just by virtue of being a gigantic dude, is probably going to carry a mythology with him.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he definitely. I mean, he started in Paris, right?
That's what I've always
information
heard.
On that. Like he was 18 when he started. A local promoter found him, and I mean, I think it's pretty accepted that Frank Valois was Valois. I'm probably butchering
yeah.
this, but. That he kind of got him to the next level when he was about 20. But, yeah, basically, I mean, it was actually spelled like Giants, like G-E-A-N-T, and then it got changed to John, I think, when he came to Montreal. But just even some of the early parts of his career, like he actually did quite a bit with joint promotions.
Which is hilarious.
Yeah.
Like, totally hilarious in hindsight because of how Americans kind of view joint promotion, which is not, to be fair, is a very stereotypical, not the right way to view it, you know. I mean, but...
And how do you mean that?
Well, I mean, for example, there's sort of this view that, like, joint promotions didn't have gimmicks, you know.
Okay.
I mean, I can't, you know, and like, okay, I guess Kendo Nagasaki didn't exist. You know, there's this sort of, like, reverse orientalist view. I think there's this view that, well, this was more legitimate wrestling because, you know, people immediately, Americans, I think, I don't know if this is the case of Canadians, but Americans, I think, instantaneously latch onto it as, like, okay, Wigan, the Snake Pit, this is where Dynamite Kid came from, and he was... tough and insane and you know stuff like that, you know, and because of that I just think people deliberately sort of downplay the gimmick aspect. And for the record, Andre may not have even been a gimmick guy there. We don't really know, I don't guess, you know.
No,
because
he was wrestling guy, he was wrestling guys like Kendo Nagasaki. Like I actually have seen results of that, and like I've got one in front of me where he wrestled a guy named Wild Angus. Like I don't think Wild Angus was confused with
he was Johnny Saint. Wild Angus was Johnny Saint under a suit and in a fat man bodysuit. No, I don't think so either. Yeah, I mean, it sounds to me like he was
Wild Angus was Johnny Saint's answer for Arachnaman.
He comes out as a big thing of Angus steak.
Yes.
The feed to the giant. No. But yeah, I mean, what year did Andre debut?
I think it would have been 64.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I knew
it
was mid 65
he started training. Because he was born in 1946. So, and he started at about 18. So that would have been about 64 or 65.
Sure. So,
and you know, like it was around what was the year he first went to joint promotions? I don't know. But the results I have like 69 or so.
Okay.
Which the
well,
idea
yeah,
of under the giant in a 69 is kind of mind-boggling, but
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of crazy. But then again, I want to say 72.
Oh, I don't mean 1969. I mean Andre the Giant in an actual 69.
I'm sure it happened.
I'm sure.
I would be worried about that situation based on the poop stories. But
yeah.
That's not the only reason I would be worried. But in a way, it is kind of weird to actually think about him being active in 69, though, because you just don't think about Andre being the guy who had this relatively long career, or at least I don't.
Yeah, I've got some stuff here saying that he was trained by Robert. Okay, I don't know how to say the last name, but Robert Lageet, I guess. So Lageet, who was a former wrestler, and then he moved to Paris around 1966. He was training with guys like Michel Saunier, Daniel Dubay, who was also known as the Little Prince, and Frank Wallace. He was training there. Yeah.
And, I mean, when he came in, like, obviously he came into Montreal and was pretty much immediately a sensation and an attraction. I mean, like, we know that.
Yeah. And I think the reason he ended up moving out of there was more because of demand elsewhere. Because, you know, I think there was a lot of demand from seeing him in the papers to get him into places like Boston and Chicago. And I'm sure they wanted him down in New York as well.
I mean, look, the guy is the most, like we mentioned, you know, he's one of, if not the most unique wrestler ever. I mean, you know, like, imagine if you had, I mean, look at it this way. Years and years and years before, you had the French Angel Maurice Tillet, who was a guy that was at least somewhat in demand with a lot of promoters, or at least that's the impression I always got, because he was sort of a freak show, right? But Tillet was not as charismatic as Andre, and he couldn't work, which Andre absolutely could work. Anybody who says he couldn't is full of shit. And so, I mean, like, you got this guy who has all the stuff that you could possibly want. Not only has he got this big visage, he's iconic, but he can also work, and he's charismatic, you know, and he's totally, so I'm sure he was in demand pretty much everywhere. I wish I had Pat's book in front of me to see how many of those top drawing shows in Montreal had Andre on top. Cause I know there were a lot. And I know Pat, the point Pat always likes to hammer home is, you know, that when they started back, started to heat up again in 1980, it was Andre Hogan that was a headliner on a sold out show. You know, which was kind of a cool thing to think about. In 1980, Hogan was coming into Montreal to work with Andre, and Andre was the hero, you know. But
yeah, that would have been really cool to see some of those shows.
Oh God, I mean, 70s Andre, I would kill to uncover a huge like that. I would kill to find really any of it. I mean, because the Kobayashi match from 72, I think it's 72 in Japan, is outstanding. Have you ever seen that, Dave?
Yeah, it's really cool.
I mean, that's an incredibly good match. I mean, like, that's one of the best matches I've seen from the 1970s. That's why I get so pissed off whenever people say Andre couldn't work. It's like, what the hell are you talking about? This guy was not, I mean, Andre the Giant, I mean, he's never going to be known for his work. I think that's fair to say. I mean, you know, but the idea that he was just this guy who couldn't do anything, who had no ability, who just was sort of trotted out there as a freak show. I mean, I guess that's based entirely around people who view him through the last year or two that he was in the public eye, right? Like the Colossal Connection year. Because I can't envision...
I actually
envision,
like the Colossal Connection a lot.
I do too, dude. You're preaching to the choir. I like Andre. I like the Andre Hawkwood team, and I actually think they were pretty decent. But I could at least see how somebody who had only seen that would think, oh, this guy was terrible. I don't agree with it, but I could at least see it. But if you've seen, like, that match, the Kobayashi match, or if you've seen really a lot of his matches from the early part of the 80s that are available, a lot of them which are fairly well-known and readily available.
There's actually been footage that went around of him against Mad Dog Vachon from about 74 in Montreal.
See, I want to see that. I haven't seen that.
Yeah, that was pretty freaking cool.
Yeah, I really want to see that, because the dichotomy there is pretty intense too. You know, it's kind of like on the 80s set for the Death Eye Driver, New Japan, where like Andre's doing those spots with Hoshino, which is one of my favorite things on the entire set.
Yeah, Andre the Giant in New Japan in the 80s, early 80s, is the best Andre I've seen.
Well, he was, I mean, I had, for that set, for the, you know, the 80s set in New Japan that Death Eye Driver does, which was 175 matches, so it was bigger than other sets that have been previously done and done since. I think I had two Andre matches in my top 10, I'm pretty sure, because I'm pretty sure I had the Hansen match, number 4, and I think I had the Killer Khan Andre match, like 6 or 7. But, I mean, those
matches.
Yeah,
I haven't watched
awesome.
The whole set. I plan to revisit it from the beginning and rate it all again, because I got about 2/3 of the way through it, and then I didn't manage to get the voting done, but I do want to rewatch the whole thing. But that match with Hansen is just
awesome.
Yeah, it's,
totally.
It's almost indescribable. It's so crazy how intense it is.
Dude, you know, the Khan match is not much worse. I mean, I don't know if you saw. I mean, yeah, you probably saw it, but like, the Khan match has this
great
moment where. Where Andre, the ref is admonishing Andre for doing a choke. He's like getting on Andre's case for choking Khan, right? And Andre sort of just brushes Khan aside and goes over to the ref and grabs him by the throat and starts wringing his neck, and he's like, "This is a choke, not this." And it's probably one of my 3 or 4 favorite things on the entire set, like spots on the entire set, because it's so awesome. And, you know, the referee is either playing it like he's in the throes of, you know, like he's literally about to die, or Andre was literally choking him. either way, it's totally awesome. But, I mean,
or
Andre,
he knew that if he didn't sell it like he was about to be choked.
Yes, exactly. But Andre was really, really great on that set. And he only appears a few times, but... You know, he's got that really fun comedy tag where he has the interactions with Hoshino. And I thought the Antonio Inoki Andre match on the set was really bad, but it was entirely because I thought Inoki was dog shit in that match. I've actually talked about that match a lot to other people. And to me,
yeah.
If I had to point to one single match that shows how good Andre was and how overrated Inoki is, it would be that match. Because that was well after Andre's physical prime. His body was already deteriorating. His weight was really spiraling out of control. And he really tried hard to have a good match. And he was doing things that were actively helping the match. And Inoki was just totally shitting all over it and not putting in any effort at all. Like,
that sounds like Inoki.
Yeah. And, you know, while we're running down the Andre match list, another match that I recently watched, Dave, that I think you would probably like, is there's a match on YouTube. It's Andre the Giant versus Abdul the Butcher from Puerto Rico.
Okay. Well, what year is it from?
I think it's 82. It's very... Andre's got a gigantic afro still, and it's basically exactly what you would want a match between Andre the Giant and Abdul the Butcher in Puerto Rico to be... You know what I mean? Like, throwing things at each other, brawling all over. It's really, really good. And I think it's another match that I would point to kind of show people that Andre wasn't just a blob that laid around, you know. Having said that, I do like a lot of late 80s Andre, to be honest, more than most people. I don't love
him. One positive memory I have is, post WrestleMania 4, when that whole thing started on Superstars, where he started the feud with Hacksaw. Remember that angle?
I don't think so. Explain this in detail.
Yeah, so like it was the first WrestleMania first Superstars after WrestleMania 4. So probably, you know, obviously taped beforehand, but Andre came out for an actual jobber match, which was so strange. He's back with Heenan at this point. And he came out, and he basically just destroyed this jobber, did the whole putting the strap around his neck, and actually just beat him by countout. So, you know, precursor to the Berserker. And then, you know, he just kept choking the guy and choking the guy. And Hacksaw Jim Duggan came out to challenge him. And Hogan, Andre put the strap around Hacksaw's neck. And Hacksaw is, you know, fading out, and he grabs the 2x4 and clocks him in the head with it and knocks him out. And then, you know, the whole place just goes nuts. And Vince McMahon is freaking out, saying it's the first time he's ever seen Andre knock unconscious. And, yeah, and then they had a feud all over the place in 88. So
I
imagine
do not remember that. That's really odd, because usually I have vivid memories of that. And one of my all-time favorite wrestling angles from WWF TV before they went to, you know, the modern model with Raw as the flagship and everything, was the Duggan Yokozuna angle, where they did the bit where Ken Duggan knocked him down and all. Like, so it's really odd that I don't remember that, because that sounds like something I would really love. But
88
was
a fun year for that stuff. I mean, they had the Jake Roberts thing, the Rick Rude thing. Jake Roberts. Yeah.
What I was going to say is when I was a kid, I loved the Jake and Andre stuff.
Yeah.
I thought that
was
totally awesome, because I remember thinking, like, because, you know, with Andre, he's so big, you never really believed anybody could beat him aside from a guy like Hogan. Or at least I didn't. I was all, like, to me, it was like, nobody can beat him. You know, just look at this fucker. Like, nobody's going to be able to beat this guy. And when he would wrestle a guy like Jake, normally I'd be like, Jake can't do anything to him. But to play up the Fear of the Snakes thing, I mean, yeah, it was kind of cartoony, but Andre sold it as so believable. And I think it was in the Royal Rumble where he eliminated him. Was it the Royal Rumble where he eliminated himself and he scurried away in fear because of the snake? I love
that
all that stuff. I think that's great.
That would have been 89, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I love all that stuff. I think that's awesome. To me, that's totally, like, when I think of wrestling from that time period, that kind of stuff is the kind of stuff that, from the WWF, I really enjoyed as a kid, you know. And Andre was a big part of that, because he was really good. He was really good at working angles, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he wasn't a guy who could contribute a ton on the mic, because he was not really understandable.
No.
But
you put Heenan with him too, right?
Yes. And I mean, Heenan is, you know, I mean, Bobby Heenan is, I don't want to say he's the best manager of all time, even though I think he is, just because I think you could make arguments for maybe one or two other people. But he was the perfect fit for Andre. I'll put it that way. You know, Jimmy Hart would not have worked with Andre. Jim Cornette would not have worked with Andre, I don't think. Bobby Heenan did work with Andre, and it was
John
really,
Tolo's
really
coach might have been a good fit.
they should have brought in Adnan to work with Andre.
Well, the one good thing with Andre is that you would never have the problem with the former wrestlers being too tall to be manager.
Yeah, Rod Fuller could have been his manager. That's true. You could have brought in Colonel Rod Parker to manage him, and there still would have been a reasonable gap in height where it wasn't totally absurd.
Yeah.
Dave, how much early 80s Andre have you seen from the WWF?
Not nearly enough. I've basically seen some of the major stuff. I've seen, like, I think I saw the cage match with Khan.
Okay.
And I can't think of much beyond that, honestly.
The reason I ask is, he actually has, like, a fair amount of stuff that's become available, because, and part of it is WWE 24/7 and other things. And I've kind of gone through some of it, but I haven't gone through a lot of it. And he, you know what he really was? He was a really good tag team wrestler. Because one of the things they would do is they put Andre in, like, six-man tags or straight tags. And as opposed to gay tags, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
They put him in these matches, and
that guy would definitely be a top, by the way. But anyway.
And they would occasionally he would play, like, he would be in peril, which sounds awful on paper. Like, why the hell is it? But it would usually actually work really good, because Andre is actually, well, at that point, was it could really sell well. And he was so big that if you got him to the ground, you kind of had this feeling like, oh, shit, how's he going to get up? It's like a horse who falls on his side, you know? Man, how the hell are they going to get this guy back up? So he was really, really good at working vulnerable, and he was also really good at, you know, working your comeback stuff. But one of the things that I really love is he had these, and he did these in singles matches too, but I think they kind of work better in tags. He'd do those spots that were kind of based around his size being impossible to combat. So they do spots like, they do like a crisscross or a rope running spot, and Andre would do the bit where the guy would just sort of run into his ass, you know, like while Andre was trying to get up. And it sounds really stupid, but, and maybe it even kind of is, but it really got, to me, it always got over how even when Andre was in danger, he was still so much bigger and so much more physically imposing and so much more powerful than anybody else, that even when he was in danger, he was never really in danger, if that makes sense. It was always like, it was inevitable, like, you could get him down, but the idea that you could beat him, no. I mean, like, that's just not going to happen. Like, and they were really, a lot of those tags, or a lot of those matches are things that are actually on YouTube, or were on YouTube, so they'd probably be relatively easy to find. But if you haven't seen them, you should check them out. I really think you'd like them a lot.
The 80 set comes out, that should be a lot of fun. I imagine there should be a lot of good stuff in the WWF one.
Yeah, there's already a ton of stuff that we found.
Because there's so much footage, too, right?
Oh, my God. I mean, like, that's the thing. I mean, whenever people want to say about Vince, yeah, he's a horrible person.
Yes, I think that's established.
Yeah, I'm afraid so. Although the Mae Young birthday thing was really sweet. But setting that aside, the stuff that is leaked out from WWE 24/7 or whatever the hell they call it now. I don't even know what the hell they call it now. But, like, our classics on demand, I think. But so much of that stuff has been just totally awesome. Like, earlier this year, I guess it was late last year, they released a Patera-San Martino match from 77 at MSG, which, to my knowledge, had never been around before. And they do stuff like that pretty regularly. So a lot of the stuff is either stuff that existed in really bad video quality before or might have existed, but it's not in high circulation. But the point is, now that it's, you know, out there, it's out there, and we can actually watch it and talk about it and enjoy it and not just theorize about, well, I wonder if Andre the Giant was any good at being a tag wrestler in 1982. You know what I mean? Yes. The answer is yes, he was. Very good, in fact. So, yeah, about that.
And then, I think when I looked through some results, one of the things that really impressed me is, like, I mean, Montreal was huge for him. Toronto was pretty big, too. He wrestled here quite a bit.
Absolutely he did. In fact, that's
through
another thing.
Even while he was big, his early run in Montreal, he came here a lot.
One of the things where, I keep mentioning him, and I swear to God I'm not mentioning him for any reason other than the fact that I happen to know a lot about his career. But, one of the things with, like, Patera that I keep pointing to as I sort of hype him and try and prepare my push for him for this year's Observer Hall of Fame is that he was a guy who worked on top in all the big cities during his tenure, right? I mean, like that's a big thing. And another thing that I would kind of push as another point would be that he worked with Andre so much. And I know they worked in Maple Leaf Gardens several times. And the thing about Andre is, to me, if I see a card that has Andre on it, in a way, it kind of has to be considered a co-main event at worst. Because,
yeah.
You know, we know based on his record as a draw that if he was even on a show, people were going to come to see it. And, yeah, you might have a main event that's a title match that might be with two excellent guys. And maybe the people that showed up really wanted to see the title match even more than Andre. But Andre was always a factor. And he definitely was a big star in Toronto. Like, I, when I was going through that stuff, he popped up on Maple Leaf results, honestly, more than I expected. A lot more than I expected. And
then in Detroit, too, because he ended up being a big star in Indianapolis, and then Detroit is, you know, the in-between place. And he did a lot of work in Detroit with the Sheik.
Yeah, he was, and you know what? Honestly, maybe that has something to do with the fact that in 1984... It was that feud that really brought Detroit back. You know, the Andre and Friends versus Stud, Patera, and also, to be fair, Valentine and Tito. Like, maybe that has something to do with it. But, I mean, Andre was just a star everywhere. Like, I know it sounds like we're kind of beating that, but, I mean, honestly, it's amazing how consistent it is. It really is. If you look... everywhere he worked, he made a, like, it's one thing to say, but this is one of the criticisms of Patera, and it's one of the criticisms of other guys who were stars. I think I've heard this criticism, for example, about Ivan Koloff, to take another example that's not Patera, or even Wahoo. I know I used to hear this about Wahoo, although I don't know that it's really founded, but one of the criticisms you always heard was, well, yes, they main evented a lot. Yes, they main evented a lot of places. Yes, they main evented a lot of places, and they did it while those places were making money and they were on big shows. But how much credit can you really give to them, because they were there when these places were hot? You know, I mean,
yes.
Like, that's kind of, like, these places were already hot. It's not like they spiked a place, you know, even 1,000 people, let alone 5,000 or 6,000. You cannot say that about Andre. Because even in places that were hot, he would do better. You know, like, the AWA was a pretty, I mean, it wasn't like burning up on fire, but it was a pretty rock-solid territory that could draw very well. And they bring him in, and guess what? You know, everywhere was up. Not one place, not a couple select towns, not like up 300 people. I mean, we're talking up like 2,000, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 people. And,
Go ahead. Well, one of the things when it comes to, like, historical analysis and being a historian with wrestling is that, you know, negative campaigning is how you establish yourself, right? this guy sucked or wasn't as good as people think because, you know, like, you know, come on, people, have some positivity.
Yeah,
I just want to make everybody happy, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
No, I mean, actually, you kind of are right, though. I mean, that's one of the criticisms. Like, I mean, I think this is kind of an aside, but it's worth maybe mentioning. Have you read Larry Matisic's book yet, Dave, the new book?
No, I definitely want to, though.
Okay, I'm going to talk about it for a minute, okay? Do you care if I talk about this for a minute? Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Because
I have
read the book. And I disagree with Todd Martin on a lot of things, okay? A whole lot of things. Although I don't dislike Todd, you know, I don't know him. But
I've met him, a great guy. But,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, he may be a great guy. I'm not criticizing him as a person. The point is me and Todd don't see eye to eye on a lot, okay? Of course, me and you don't either. But Todd did the review for The Observer on this book, okay? And, it was a very negative review of Larry's book, to the point where it actually shocked me how negative it was, because even though I agreed with a lot of Todd's criticisms of the book, which is why I mentioned this, because I do agree, my point is that I agree with Don a lot of it. He still sort of panned the book, despite giving Larry credit for the bios and some other stuff, things like that. And then one of the sort of criticisms on the flip side that you've heard from Larry and others is that, and by the way, this book is the 50 greatest wrestlers, professional wrestlers of all time. I should probably mention that. But one of the criticisms on the flip side has been, well, like you said, wrestling analysis, wrestling stories are very negative. Like they'll harp on one thing and they'll just bury it. Or they'll fixate on one flaw and they'll just shit all. And honestly, that's not, I think that's a fair criticism to a degree. I don't think that's an unfair criticism. I think that's I think there is a tendency.
Trying to be the anti-Mark, you know?
Yeah, I think there's a tendency, you know, especially because so much of it is online, to be your typical know-it-all and say, no, this is wrong, this is wrong, this is wrong, this is wrong. However, the flip side of that yet again is if you're going to write a book like that and say you want to spark discussion, you can't then complain when discussion is sparked. I want this to be a catalyst for people to talk about this, and if we disagree, we disagree. Let's try and do it respectfully. And then if people disagree, you get angry. Now, that's not really the case necessarily with Todd, I don't guess. But I do think there's a thin line between saying wrestling historians are assholes who fixate on minutia and saying I don't want, and using that as a crutch to sort of insulate yourself from criticism. I'm not saying that's what Larry's doing, but I do get the feeling that some of the people who have defended Larry are basically doing that, which is, you know, if you criticize Larry, you're just a minutia-obsessed asshole. No, I mean, you can criticize, you can disagree with the criteria in the book, which I strongly disagree with. You can disagree with a lot of the picks in the book, which I strongly do. And you can still also appreciate the book, which I do. I actually enjoyed it.
Just have fun with it, too, right?
Yeah. I mean, I enjoyed the book. I thought, to me, it was worth the money I paid for it. I strongly disagree with it.
And the bios are supposed to be quite good.
The bios are good for the most part. I had some criticisms there. I thought some things were a little bit off or, you know, maybe put through the but here's the thing. One of the big criticisms has been, well, Larry tells wrestling history, you know, like Larry protects St. Louis guys, like supposedly is a criticism. I really don't think that's a criticism. I think the criticism is more, and maybe this isn't even a criticism so much as it is just a fact. Larry's view of history comes through the prism of St. Louis. And of course it does. I mean, the guy worked there, right? I mean, wouldn't you expect that? And I think the difference is he comes through that prism, and people who were not in the office there, or not other places, they're going to have a more detached view. And the argument for some people might be, well, sure, it's a detached view, but they don't know all the inside stuff that Larry knew. They don't know this. Well, that's true. However, sometimes having that detached view and having perspective allows you to analyze things in a more objective way. You know, sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes you play favorites, too. It works both sides of the street. And this is kind of getting off topic. But I kind of want to mention that because of what you said about wrestling historians. But I also wanted to mention that because even Larry in his new book really puts over Andre a lot, despite the fact that Andre is not really the ideal guy from the St. Louis Wrestling Club perspective of what a wrestler is supposed to be. Yeah. So even among your guys like Larry, who would have maybe a more traditionalist view, Andre is a guy that had a lot of respect and was put over very strong. I don't remember where he was in the book, in the top 50 now off the top of my head, but I thought the bio on Andre was very favorable and very fair to him. And you know, there were other people where I thought the bios were good, but you could see that it was almost begrudging where he was placing people or things like that. With Andre, I didn't get that feeling. I got the feeling that he really, really liked them. And he told a great story in the Andre bio, too. I don't don't know if I should. You know what? I'm going to relate it. I don't care.
He
tells a story of him and Andre went to dinner. I think it was in Minneapolis. It had to be Mini St. Paul because it was when Andre was in with the AWA and Larry, I guess, was maybe visiting because he'd done commentary for Vern a couple times. And they went out to dinner. And they were out with Crusher Blackwell, Jerry Blackwell, and they were out with some NHL guys. And, they were sitting at a table. What's that? I'm pretty sure it's in Twin Cities. I'm pretty sure it's Minneapolis, St. Paul.
Okay.
And they were just shooting the shit. It might have been Winnipeg. I can't. It was one. I'm pretty sure it was an AWA town. That's all I remember. And they were, just shooting the shit, doing whatever, talking about their relative sports and athletic background, so to speak. And they were talking about injuries. And the NHL guys were sort of going down a list or whatever. And then Blackwell basically pulls up his pant leg, I guess, and shows his knee. And it's literally just floating there. There's no cartilage. It's totally shot, right? And these NHL guys are like, oh, my God, how long has it been like that? When it first happened, how much time did you take off? And I don't remember the exact quote, but Blackwell's basically, well, none. We don't get paid if we don't work. And Andre and Larry were walking off later, and Larry sort of, I wish I could remember the exact thing or had it right in front of me, but Larry basically said that Andre had this look of like immense pride and was just so was so proud that Blackwell had kind of put these hot shots in their place by being, yeah, we're a lot tougher than you guys are.
Yeah.
because Blackwell's another guy like Andre who was very, very big, and the physical toll for those guys. I mean, you look at these kids now today and guys my age and younger who are doing fucking insanely athletic spots, but they're small dudes and they're not carrying around that kind of mass. Guys like Andre doing drop kicks and, my God, like I can't even imagine physically what that was like, let alone just trying to travel from place to place in a fucking car when you're that big.
Yeah.
I mean,
that is a nice story and much more favorable than when I was hanging out with King Kong Bundy and asked him what he thought of Andre, and he referred to him as a big, fat, nasty, smelly, hairy prick.
Yeah, that is a much...
slightly more favorable.
Slightly. I just like the fact that you were hanging out with King Kong Bundy.
Yeah, that was. I like to reference that, and it was so much fun.
We need to get him on the show.
Oh, man, that was so great. He is so, like, if you read Bret Hart's book, that he's funny, but man, you have no idea how funny this guy is. Like, the funniest parts of it was he actually started doing the Joe Pesci Goodfellas thing with me. Like, what, you think I'm a funny guy, Dave? And, like, was basically, I don't think that's even what he was trying to reference, but he was basically doing that. It was, and it was like a year after Walk the Line came out. And he was singing That Ain't Me, Babe. And I don't know. It was funny.
Oh, Dave, you're such an insider.
I'm something.
you're such an inside shooty guy with all your all your big time wrestling connections, man.
I don't know that many of those. I hung out with King Kong Bundy for a day, and I talked to Leo Burke. But I know Dave Meltzer too, but not that well. He doesn't call me up for advice on drawing stats or anything like that.
For some reason in my mind, I just got an image of like Dave calling you up, and he's got like. He's got a charcoal drawing or whatever kit like in front of him.
He's trying to draw a picture of Andre and wants some tips on
some pointers.
Forehead.
Right. Can you give me some pointers on this Musgrave? I can't figure out how to get started here. What sort of lines should I use?
What should be the bigger circle? His jaw or his forehead?
Oh, Jesus Christ.
What should the shading be like under his eye? And what color charcoal will effectively capture the image of the poop going over Bad News Allen's face?
Do you know what the best thing about the Andre Poop stories are? Is that I think everybody's heard them, but we've all heard them with about 19 different guys who he supposedly crapped on. Like, I've heard Bad News Brown, Savage, Ultimate Warrior. At one point,
I've only heard Bad News.
At one point, I heard Jake the Snake. I mean, I've literally heard, like, tons of guys that this supposedly happened with. You know, so it's a
there's more sightings of Andre pooping on people than there are of, you know, Elvis in the late 80s and the early 90s.
It's a, apparently, it was very common. If we're to believe wrestling lore, it was very common. It was a regular spot on the house show circuit.
I know when I met Wolfman Willie Farkas last year, he actually really enjoyed that story and hadn't heard it before. But he very much liked Andre. Talked about how the flight attendants would hold out a blanket for him at the back of the plane and let him poop on it. I'm not sure if that was practicality and kindness or a fetish thing or not, but...
What I really like about this is the idea that you're telling these stories... You're telling these stories to an elderly man wrestler, confidant of Bruno Sammartino.
Yeah.
Anyway... We got sidetracked there. I don't know. Dave, do you have any other thoughts relating to Andre?
Oh, tons. I mean, one of my favorite results I saw was from 1976 in Detroit. Andre the Giant versus the Sheik. Winner has to ride a donkey. Who do you think the donkey was rooting for in that one? It's like, look at the size of that bastard. I think I'll take the guy who throws fire and carries a sword. Thank you very much.
In my head, I just have, like, I envision the Sheik dressed up as a jockey, but instead of the little horse whip thing, whatever the hell you call those things, he's got a pencil and he's stabbing the donkey in the ass to get him to the... Come on!
I just pictured Andre trying to sit on the thing, and he actually, he can't actually sit down. Like, it's actually, he stands over it, and it's only up to his knees.
No, see, when you hear stories about matches like that, which are totally awesome, by the way, and I wish I could have seen live, but when you hear stories about matches like that, the first thing I think is, especially after we're talking about Larry Matisic, no wonder Sam Muchnick was not a fan of the Sheik. That is the most bizarre thing ever. I want to know what led up to that. Like, okay.
I want to know if they actually went through with the stipulation.
What was the build to that? Like, what? I don't. That's like an even more ridiculous version of, like, loser eats dog food, you know? Like,
yeah,
totally,
yeah.
Totally ridiculous, but totally awesome. That was in 76, you said?
76, yeah.
Man.
I really hope it didn't involve anything, like, with, you know, private moments with a donkey and some peanut butter or anything like that.
Oh, God. Yeah, I think we all hope that.
I actually got bit by a donkey in Prince Edward Island when I was 5. No peanut butter involved. It was my hand. But
so, that, you know what? I got to tell you, that might be my new signature for the boards right there. I actually got bit by a donkey in Prince Edward Island when I was 5.
No peanut butter, though.
Outstanding. What other interesting Andre results did you find, Dave? I'm curious.
You know what I find interesting is just, like, you know, some of the 1990, 1991, even 92, like, real world tag league stuff. Him and Baba against you know, the Land of the Giants, which was Nitron and some other guy. Giant Warrior, you know, and then against Misawa and Kawada. I kind of want to watch those matches, but I think they're more fun in my imagination.
Yeah, I mean, like, but I kind of think what you, that sort of illustrates the way we view Andre and, like, how iconic he is. That, like, even on, because, I mean, there's no way those are any good, but
no.
you're still sort of drawn to them. Like,
yes.
Holy shit, Andre the Giant. Andre the Giant, wrestling Giant Warrior in 1991 All Japan. I want to see that. Like, you don't, Andre, you know, Andre sort of falls in the same group to me as Abdul the Butcher, and maybe even to a lesser extent Sabu, of guys where the more absurd the match is on paper, I want to see it more.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know what I mean? Oh, it's Andre the Giant versus Alex Porto. Oh, I want to see that. Like, I just instantaneously want to see the match. Like, there's not a lot of guys who are like that, but there are certain guys where the more ridiculous the matchup is on paper, the more I want to see it. And Andre would be one of them.
I've never actually watched Andre versus Otto Wands, but I kind of think it would be fascinating. You know, like,
I haven't seen it, but I bet it would be good.
What's that?
I haven't seen it, but I bet it would be good.
Yeah, you know, and that's like 86, 87, you know, like after Andre turned heel in WWF. And, you know, like just, you know, it's kind of fun to watch him and versus Knack in 83. And, you know, just seeing him go everywhere and have all these different roles. He did do wrestling early on in Germany as well. And wrestling in France in the late 60s, like, that's a scene that kind of gets celebrated a bit as, you know, kind of an undiscovered stuff. But if obviously there's no footage of that stuff, but it would be really fun to be able to do our time travel app and go back and see some of that stuff.
Well, I got to tell you, I've heard conflicting things about whether or not there's footage of that stuff that actually exists. I mean,
oh yeah, that's
true.
I've heard that too. Yeah.
I mean, I've actually heard that there is footage of it, but that it's not been released, and who knows if it ever will be, you know.
But
so,
footage of Andre, do you think? Or, well, I guess
it would shock me. You know, it wouldn't shock me. That, like, it seems like he would have been an interesting enough figure during the period where, some of that stuff may still be around. I'm more of an optimist than ever when it comes to wrestling footage because mm-hmm. – stuff that I had assumed, well, we're never going to see that, you know, like, is now, I mean, if you had told me when I really got hardcore into trading, well, that's a bad example because that was so long ago, but if you had told me, say, in even 2000 or 2001, or even 2003, 2004, that Buddy Rose, we have enough Buddy Rose footage from Portland, where you could put together a really excellent comp that captures his entire career, during that run anyway, and showcases his abilities against a huge breadth of guys, I said, no way in hell. You know, there's just no way. You know, and the funny thing is, a lot of the stuff already did exist, just wasn't well circulated, but a lot of the stuff just was sitting in Buddy's garage. And there's countless other examples of that, of stuff that I thought would never surface or didn't even know existed, which has surfaced in some form. You know, I mean, a perfect example is Abdul the Butcher versus Andre from Puerto Rico. I had no clue that existed, you know? Like, and there it is on YouTube. So,
well, and I was able to find that crazy match list of Andre, too.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I wonder how many career matches he had. Like, I also wonder who his common opponents were, you know, because obviously Hogan is the one that is most associated with him because, and they pop up a lot of places too. I mean, they wrestled in Japan. You've got the match at Shea Stadium, which was obviously, you know, a big undercard match on that show. You got WrestleMania 3, you got the Saturday Night's Main Event, you know, you got the match in Montreal that Pat and Bert always talk about.
You mentioned Patera. He had a good little run with the Spoiler too, I think, in different places. So.
Yeah, that's another guy I'd love to do really explore more with Jardine. But
we got to do that.
Yeah, I mean, because Jardine is the guy where I get the feeling if people knew more about him, he would be kind of, you know, why is this guy not a Hall of Fame level guy? I've talked about that way. But people just don't know that much about him. Andre, I don't know. I'd be really interested to see who does most comment. I mean, you kind of have to, in a way, factor out the WWF post, you know, once you get really far into the expansion because the house show runs and everything. So, of course, he's going to wrestle those guys every night.
He can wrestle a lot, yeah.
But I'm more interested in guys that he wrestled in multiple territories. You know what I mean? Like, who did he wrestle? Like, Hogan, obviously, we know. Patera, I know he wrestled several places. WWF, AWA, Toronto, Montreal, Atlantic. Yes, Don Leo Jonathan would be another one. Those
probably Qualls, too.
You would think so. I would be really interested to see Killer Khan. I know he worked in New Japan and the WWF. I don't know if he worked anywhere else. But I'd be interested to see, like, and I don't know how well the cage match, or is it cage match? There's one site where you can do, it's not cage match, it's, shit, I can't think of it. Maybe WrestlingData.com.
WrestlingData.com is really good.
Yeah. They are okay on the surface level. I mean, they're a good site. It's a great idea. But it's really incomplete when it comes to results, so I'm not sure how much we could learn from it.
But you can still find stuff you didn't know about.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I use it all the time. I think it's a brilliant idea for a site, especially if you're a geek like you and me. But yeah, I'd be really interested to see who his most common opponents were over, you know, multiple territories and over the breadth of his career. Seems like it would be an interesting hodgepodge of guys. But, you know, another thing about Andre is that, to me, he was totally awesome as a babyface and a heel. And that's one of the things that to me is, it's not the most important thing in wrestling, because you've got a guy like Rey Mysterio Jr., who I think is one of the all-time, like, definitely top 20 all-time, probably top 10 all-time level guys. And obviously, when you think of Rey, you think of babyface. Or Stan Hansen, which is the exact opposite, who I also think of sort of at the same level. And you think of Stan Hansen, you think of heel.
I actually kind of put a Rey's run with the Filthy Animals near the top of his career, so I do beg to differ.
But Andre, to me, is, you know, it's even more impressive when you're good as a face and the heel and you're that big. Because I mean, I guess in one hand, he's a really beloved figure, so being a face wouldn't be that hard. I mean, like, my wife loves Andre the Giant. She's ambivalent about wrestling at best, you know. But Andre, like, being that big and being able to be a sympathetic baby face, I think, is not easy. And he was really good at it. And
well, his facial expressions were really fun.
Excellent facial expressions. Some of my favorite in wrestling, actually. He's not my absolute favorite facial guy. I'm saying that just for you, Dave, by the way. he's not my absolute favorite in that regard. Oddly enough, Killer Khan might be my absolute favorite in that regard. But he's near the top, and he's really, really good at it. And I don't know that there's too many other guys who, with his size and the sort of physical disadvantages that he had, particularly later in life, could have been able to focus enough. Because, I mean, to communicate things like that, you don't just have to know how to do it. You have to also sort of push aside everything else. And, I mean, this is a guy that can barely walk toward the end of his life.
Yeah, I wonder if it helped that he was actually in constant physical pain.
See, I would actually think it would hurt at times, you know, when he's doing certain things. But then again, who knows? I mean, to a degree, I guess, like any profession, once you've mastered something or gotten good at something, it's almost like autopilot. You know, you just go out there and you do it. But
here's the hypothetical for you.
1977. Instead of Bob Backlund, Vince McMahon Sr. goes with Andre the Giant over Superstar Graham. How do you think it would have worked?
Well, you know, it's funny you should say that, because there's a thread over Wrestling Classics. That,
really?
There's a thread over Wrestling Classics in the last maybe about a week old, where maybe 2 weeks old, where they asked the question, if not Backlund, who? You know, and there were some people who said Andre. And you know, people were batting around all kinds of names because people were taking it from different perspectives. Like, well, you got to assume it would be a guy similar, you know, like similar look, maybe similar background, you know.
Could Andre have done a successful 6-year run as champ? Maybe not, but I bet you it would have been a hell of a 2-year run if he went with it.
Well, see, what I was about to say is we often hear about how nobody could have done what Hogan did, right? Like, Hogan was the only guy who could have been the figurehead of that expanding company, you know. And I stick by that. I've always said that, and I still believe it. But if we had cable TV technology 5 years earlier, or 6 years earlier, and you would ask me to pick somebody to be the guy, it would have been Andre the Giant. Because he was a guy who was larger than life. He at that point he wasn't physically broken down, so he could still at least theoretically keep up with the demand. And he was hot everywhere. In 77, if he had gone over Graham, it's really hard to say, because on the one hand, I feel like it's so hard to guess because of the fact, or was it 70, I guess it was 70, was it 77 or 78? I can't remember, but
78 actually, 77 Superstar won it from Bruno around April, and then the very beginning of 78.
That's what I thought. But so, I mean, I get, it's tough to conceptualize, because the shift from Graham to Backlund was massive. And it was even more massive when you consider the fact that Backlund was not an ethnic babyface, which the previous two babyface champions have been. And the previous two babyface champions were the only babyface champions that had ever been in New York, really, that were that degree of champion. So as it was a seismic shift. I mean, it was radically different. And you know, to me, the best answer that anybody came up with on the Wrestling Classics board in terms of guys who were similar to Backlund in look and style was actually Jim Brunzell, which sounds hilarious. But Bob Backlund was a hilarious pick at the time, I'm sure to a lot of people. But in terms of guys who were established, you know, I mean, let's put it this way. Could Andre have credibly beaten Billy Graham? No question. You know, could he have credibly carried the title for a long time? No question. Would it have been a wise business decision? I actually think the answer to that is no. Because Andre had so much value being booked out to other territories, which would not have been done as much if he had held the belt. And also because Andre didn't need the title. You know, we hear about that all the time, but that's true. I mean,
be any more famous if he had been champion.
No. I mean, Andre is a guy who did not need – he's maybe the textbook example of a guy who did not need a title to be over. During a period where titles did help. You know, now it really doesn't even hardly matter. But, you know, he did not need a title. Could he have done it? Yes. Would it have been a big deal? I mean, to me, the more interesting hypothetical is if cable technology had been around in 78, 79 – it was in its infancy, but if it had been as big a deal and as widespread in 78, 79, would Andre have been a good fit to go national with? And in that respect, I think the answer is yes.
I think so,
The hypothetical of whether or not he could have beaten Graham, I think, is less interesting, not so much because it's not an interesting thought experiment, but because of the fact that we know Andre didn't need the title and he was over so many other places, that while theoretically he could have, from a financial viability standpoint, it might have actually been a net loss because you didn't need him in that spot. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's a, I mean, but it is an interesting question. Yeah, I mean, and it's a question we're thinking about because when we think about WWF stars from that period, you're right in the sense that everybody thinks Billy Graham, Bob Backlund, Bruno, Pedro. You know, those are the guys we think of. But Andre was really right there in terms of guys that were booked through that office, you know. And in fact, on a global, certainly on a national and global scale, by the late 70s especially, there's no question that Andre was the biggest star that was affiliated with WWF office. No question at all. By that point, of guys that had even a loose affiliation with the WWF, or the WWF, I guess, at the time, Andre was the biggest star, period. He may not have been the champion, but he was the biggest star on a worldwide basis. I honestly can't think of anybody that would even be a serious competitor to that.
It's pretty interesting because his career pretty much ran smack into The Undertaker's as far as there was a few months where neither of them were, you know, actually, no, he pretty much took right over from as far as when they were there, right? Like Andre's career in WWF ended when Undertaker started pretty much within a few months. And Undertaker pretty much has the role of the company that Andre always did.
You know what? I think that's a very good point. You know, I'd never really thought of the, I have thought, you know, to compare them kind of their roles and stuff, but I'd never really thought about the fact that Taker sort of, you know, slid in right as Andre left. But you know, and I doubt that that was a conscious decision in the sense that I doubt that Vince was sitting around and said, we need somebody to fill the Andre role. Let's get this guy. Although it may have happened, you know. But, yeah, that's a good point. And I think just as Andre didn't need a title because he was so over, I mean, what's the most over title in wrestling right now?
Oh, it's absolutely the streak.
It's the streak. It's not even close. I don't even think it's up for debate. I don't think there's any title. I mean, this isn't a knock on New Japan, even though I'm not a huge fan of the style, which is, you got to give those guys a lot of credit for what they've done business-wise over the last 2 years. It's not a knock on Punk, who I think worked really hard, although I think they've really cut his balls off and he has almost no value right now. I mean, to me, Punk is basically the new Chris Jericho, but it's not a knock on any of these guys who have worked hard. But the most over title, I mean, in wrestling is the streak, period. And I'm not a guy who likes to make a lot of MMA wrestling comparisons, but the streak is like the closest thing in wrestling that you have, you know, to sort of George St. Pierre's title reign in UFC. Like, you know, like he's the guy you think of when you think of dominant UFC champions, even more so than Anderson Silva, because Silva toys with people so much. You know, whereas St. Pierre just sort of throws you on the ground and does his deal, you know. Taker is the guy that, that streak is the top title in wrestling. And Andre, you know, it's not the same thing because the way the promotions works different now because you have national promotions versus regional promotions. But just as challenging the streak meant an awful lot, you know, being a guy who was body slam Andre the Giant meant an awful lot. You know what I mean? Or being a guy who would even wrestle him in a big town meant an awful lot.
Well, and they also pretended going into WrestleMania 3 that he'd never been defeated.
He'd never been slammed. Yeah, he'd never been slammed or defeated, yeah.
Or defeated. And given that it was, you know, a national expansion, you know, a lot of people, including me, believed it.
Oh, you know, I believed it as a kid, you know. But see, again, that's not just a testament to the promotional skill. That's a testament to Andre, too, because you look at him and the way he carried himself and how impressive he was, and you really would believe that nobody could beat him. You know what I mean? Like, you look at it like, nobody could beat this guy, you know?
Yeah.
So that's...
Well, I got to say, I was confused, because when you kept referring to the streak, I thought you were talking about Andre's match against Bad News.
Well, maybe Maybe I was.
just out of curiosity, when you're talking about that thread of classics, did anyone suggest Mil Máscaras as champ?
You know, I don't. I know Andre got suggested Terry Funk, which I thought was hilarious. And I said that is the biggest Terry Funk mark on earth. Ted DiBiase was suggested. Jim Brunzel was suggested, which I honestly think is the best direct comparison to Backlund in terms of a guy who was a young babyface that had good amateur skills.
Any Leo Berklov? No. No.
It could work a certain way. There was no Leo Berklov, I'm sorry to say.
Okay.
Yeah, so.
Like I say, I would have loved to have seen Leo be a challenger for Backlund, but
so,
that's another story.
What's that?
I said that's another story. I would have loved to see Leo as a challenger for Backlund, but.
Oh, well, Backlund could have had a variety of other guys of value challenge him. Because he was a guy that could work. Backlund was credible against Hogan, you know what I mean? But he was also credible. You would believe a guy like Leo could challenge him, right? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like he had both the size, he had the impressive strength and the amateur credentials where you could put him up against a monster or you could put him up against a more traditional size guy, and it was believable. That's kind of what I'm getting at.
Yep.
So
one thing that's cool with Andre, though, too, that people should look up is go onto YouTube and look up Andre the Giant Kung Fu movie. I sent you that clip, I think, okay?
Yes.
Yeah, it's from 1971, maybe 1970. No, actually, I think it might be 1970, and it's a Kung Fu movie, and basically, like, he's in a dojo of some kind, and, you know, it's really impressive seeing how young he was and how agile he was, you know, to be able to move around like that. It must have been cool to be able to see him wrestle at the time, too.
I'm telling you, everybody, and I'm going to have to cut this short pretty soon because I'm getting looks from the wife, but I'm telling you, everybody who has not seen Andre versus Strong Kobayashi, and I'm probably butchering his last name because I'm terrible at Japanese last names, but everybody who has not seen that should watch it right now because it shows Andre in his athletic glory, you know, and it shows what he was physically capable of doing, probably better than any other match, because even the stuff from New Japan that we have, he was physically, he was past his prime.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he wasn't as dynamic and as impressive. So, yeah. But anyway.
I think it was a fun topic, though.
It was
such a fun icon in wrestling. And, you know, doing more shows like this on guys like him, and there's just so many guys that can be fun to celebrate. It's always a good idea. We were saying this is the wrestling culture version of date night because we haven't had a show with just the two of us in a long time.
This was, you know, to me, Andre.
It's nice to have a good cuddle.
Yeah, Andre is not my favorite wrestler of all time, but he is one of the most lovable, and he is, to my mind at least, as all this noise is going on behind me, I apologize, he is the most one of the most fascinating guys. So I don't know if I entirely did him justice with my talking about him tonight, but...
We're just having fun. I mean, and, you know, like, also look up the Heart of the Giant movie trailer for this, like, horrific-looking movie that they were making about him. I can't even describe how bad this looked from a few years back.
Who was the lead character of him?
Oh, I don't know. Some guy. I can't remember his name, but with the link for this, we'll have to include a link for that.
It's comically bad. Was Billy Crystal producing that movie? Wasn't there a movie that Billy Crystal
produced? No, that was My Giant.
My Giant with George Mears. Okay. Yeah, I'm getting things confused. Okay. It's not surprising.
Yeah, no, I'm talking. this thing looks like worse than
worth more low budget than any porn ever.
Really?
I'll put it,
now I want to see it.
Oh, you've got, oh man, it's comically bad. Oh, yeah, I'll get a copy of that link to you. It's crazy bad.
Yeah, we got to put that link in here. I want to thank Alan for posting our link on the figure four board for the, I think the last show
we
did, because neither one of us did. So thanks, Alan.
Thanks, Alan, for all the plugs you give us. What a great guy. You know.
While I'm thinking about it, I meant to thank him when he did it at the time, and I don't think I did. So while I'm thinking about being thankful, in the spirit of George Murison and My Giant and this Andre the Giant movie that supposedly looked terrible. And by the way, the worst book that WWE has ever done was the Andre the Giant book, and it really pisses me off because I get the feeling that of all the guys in wrestling, if you could name three guys I want a bio written about more than anybody else, it would be Vern Gagne, Vince McMahon, and Andre the Giant, and they butchered the Andre book. So that's another thing to bitch
about.
I'll
tell you, that book is probably like friggin' Hooker. Or, like the wrestling version of Craig Baskey compared to this movie.
Okay. I got to tell the story, and then I got to get off the phone because my daughter and my wife are going to kill me. So I'm at work the other day, and I'm rereading Hooker, which I have read before, but it's a long time. So
One of the top five wrestling books, I think.
Outstanding book, no question about it. So I'm reading it, and one of my bosses walks in, and she walks in and looks up, and I'm holding this book up and as I'm reading it, and she looks at it, and it's this cover, the Crowbar Press version, and it's got all these little thumbnail pictures of Luthez all over it, and it just says Hooker. And she pauses for like 2 seconds, she looks at me, and she goes, "I don't even want to know what that book is about."
That's so good.
I just let her believe whatever she believed.
Yeah.
I didn't try and...
And speaking of wrestling icons, based on that book, I do want to do an episode on Fred Grubmeier as well. But we should probably wrap it up here. So, Andre the Giant, great man. Lots of fun to talk about. Lots of fun to examine his career. Like I say, a comp of Andre would be pretty fun as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to see it. And as always, it was fun doing the show with you, Dave. We will
not be as sporadic
going forward. Yeah, because I think, and I need to talk to you about one of these things off air, but we should have, as we get close to WrestleMania weekend, we should have a pretty cool guest shortly before that. And we'll also do our WrestleMania weekend show, I assume, like we did last year, which was a lot of fun.
Yeah,
so,
great.
On that note, have a good evening.
You want to talk for a second off air, too?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Good night, everybody. And just remember, anybody want a peanut, greatest line in movie history. Good night.